Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to talk with Frank Rich. Thanks for listening. In Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. The Fox News Network, run by Roger Ailes on cable, has more viewers than CNN and MSNBC combined. That sounds good, right? Then why did moderate conservative columnist David Brooks say more people own ferrets than watch Fox News? According to my guest, writer, author, and HBO consultant Frank Rich, conservative Brooks knows what everybody is coming to know. For all its savvy and bluster, Fox News has only about a million loyal viewers, tiny compared to 6 or 8 million on a standard network like NBC or ABC. Frank Rich wrote about this a while ago in his New York Magazine story about Fox. We're going to get his take on how influential the Fox network will be in selecting and assisting the Republican presidential candidate. Could, for instance, Fox resuscitate Chris Christie, or help at least? Has the Obamacare rollout damaged Democrats enough to make voters vote in Republicans in the congressional election that's coming? Does Hillary Clinton have a chance with young voters, crucial independents, and a better political organization than the one she had previously, meaning the right get-out-the-vote operation, the right fundraising operation, sliced and diced using new media analytics? Lots to talk about with one of my favorite writers, Frank Rich, now also a consultant at HBO on the series Veep, starting its new season in April. Frank, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. Great to talk to you again.
So before we get to Fox News, will Hillary Clinton be the Democratic presidential candidate?
I'm really loath to make any kind of predictions. You know, remember at this point, last time it was going to be a Hillary versus Giuliani race. In 2008 rather, and so we don't really know. As things stand now, it's hard to see how she wouldn't get the nomination, assuming she's running, which we also can't 100% assume, but it sure looks that way. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can't fight something with nothing, and there's really not much of a Democratic bench. It's hard to picture Andrew Cuomo, who might be a presidential aspirant someday, right, running against Hillary Clinton, since he himself is, an alumnus of the Clinton administration. Elizabeth Warren has, I think, who's a fantasy candidate for some on the more liberal side of the Democratic Party, has been pretty forthright in saying that she has no interest in it, at least next time around. And so there's really no one to go against her. So mm-hmm. So that sort of answers the question. Martin O'Malley, an outgoing Maryland Democratic governor, who also has ties to the Clintons, has said he's forming, exploratory group to run. But even in Washington Post polling of the state of Maryland, his home state, where he's a popular governor, he's way, way behind Hillary Clinton in any polling. And Joe Biden, I also think, is not a real candidate. I think that my theory, and it's not my theory alone, is that he's sort of making noises about it in part to ensure his relevance for the rest of the Obama administration, which he serves. But it's hard to imagine that he would run against Hillary Clinton. It would be very divisive. I don't think he would want to do it. And also, I think he'd lose. But so, anything can happen in politics, so you never know.
Yeah.
But it sure looks that way.
Have you been watching? I've been watching Hillary Clinton speaking in front of very large audiences, and I'm seeing something that I saw when she ran for the presidency before. It took her considerable time, at least in my view, to communicate a kind of warmth and authenticity. I think despite how famous she is in the world, it's not a natural state for her to be, communicating in quite that way. And so I'm seeing that back again.
I think your perception is right. I think as someone who's met her at least a little bit in private events and so on, through the years, she's actually very warm as everyone says, in person and has a sense of humor and seems, you know, very human to the extent that, you know, any politician seems human with the whole public staring at her or him.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not a gifted public speaker, and she doesn't really have a great touch in dealing with the public. And we saw, you know, in 2008, in my view, embarrassing attempts to sort of make herself folksy. It's the kind of stuff we parody, actually, with Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character, the vice president in Veep, the show I work on.
Yeah.
You know, she would go to, what, bars in coal mining country or western Pennsylvania, Hillary, and knock back a drink. It's completely unpersuasive. Her husband is brilliant at it, and I dare say that he could well be front and center, although that also cuts both ways, as we saw in 2008, where sometimes he seemed determined to upstage his own wife.
I wanted to sort of jump in for a minute, Frank, and say that there's been a lot of talk about President Obama sitting down with one of the hosts on Funny or Die.
Yes.
And we have that clip posted right now at our site, if you'd like to see it, at WNPR.org. Just search programs for the Faith Middleton Show. It's posted on our page.
I can't wait to see it. Is it funny? Have you looked at it?
It seems pretty rehearsed to me, edited, you know, they're both playing a role, and so it didn't feel natural to me, but there were some funny moments. Mm-hmm. Is there a Republican candidate, including the troubled Chris Christie, who could give Hillary Clinton a very hard time? Who comes to mind?
I have always felt, and I've actually written this in New York Magazine, another piece I did a few months ago, that the most interesting potential opponent, which doesn't mean I think he'll necessarily win, is Rand Paul.
Mm-hmm, me too.
Chris Christie, let's just talk about him a second, even pre the bridge scandal. Chris Christie is a moderate Republican. You know, by Republican standards, many Republicans find him a liberal, not just because he was seen palling around with President Obama after Hurricane Sandy, but also because his views on things like guns and immigration are not, by that party standards, are to the left, not by the Democratic Party standards, but by the Republican Party standards. And so he's never really been that popular with the Republican base. So I never understood how he could get the nomination even before the scandal.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, he would get it by default, perhaps, in the way that Mitt Romney got it, who also wasn't beloved by the race, by the base. That said, I think Christie is done. I think the scandal, it just seems every day there's a new piece in the Times, which has been doing terrific investigation, as has the Wall Street Journal, reaching further into the Port Authority and its federal investigation, and not to mention the local investigation. Otherwise, it's sort of a free-for-all in the Republican Party. And I think the same people who wanted Chris Christie are holding on to the fantasy that Jeb Bush would run, because he's that exact kind of establishment, moderate conservative candidate. But Bush, new polling shows that Jeb Bush, who has by no means said he wants to run, claims he's thinking about it, would meet a lot of resistance even within the Republican Party, where again he's regarded as somewhat too liberal. So who's left? A lot of the flakes from last time, one of whom was of course Rand Paul's father. But Rand Paul is a clever candidate. What I've found striking about him for a while now is, first of all, he appeals to a certain kind of young voter that might otherwise be alienated entirely from the Republican Party, a libertarian young voter who may have conservative views about economics and government, and want a small or non-existent government, but is more liberal on social views. Rand Paul is anti-choice. And he is wavered. It's hard to know exactly where he is on same-sex marriage. I mean, he's against it, I guess, but he doesn't talk about it much. But he, by first with that drone, anti-drone filibuster, and then by generally espousing a foreign policy that is a complete switch from the McCain, Lindsey Graham, Chris Christie foreign policy of neoconservatism, he's very appealing to a group that normally it tends to tune out the GOP these days. Mm-hmm. He also comes across as sort of a champion of marijuana liberalization. And the other thing that to me makes him most interesting and actually unique in this Republican field, he never attacks Obama. He has never waded into that nasty, almost sometimes, in my view, racist demonization of Obama that's been so common and ugly in that party. It's just not in his record. He is always respectful of Obama, even when criticizing him, and that's a real change of tone. And they're not going to be pulling out video of him saying outrageous things or being a birther or any of that. That said, I still can't see him winning against a mainstream Democratic candidate, whether it's Hillary Clinton or someone else. But I don't see any Republican candidate right now who is any stronger.
Remember when his father was running and he was attacked for some things he'd written that some people said seemed racist? And so I was thinking that Rand Paul can't go anywhere near anything that would smack of that because what his father was charged with.
Right. There's been a couple of people on Rand Paul's staff that have turned out to have associations with the racist neo-Confederacy type groups, but he got rid of them immediately, disowned it, and I don't actually think it even reflects his views. And he made this famous gaffe a few years ago where he went on Rachel Maddow when he was running for Senate and basically came out against the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and then denied it from a sort of Barry Goldwater libertarian point of view. He's now backpedal on that. He's tried to, and however ineffectually, to reach out to African Americans. He appeared at Howard University, which seems like, why should he get credit for that? The thing is, no other Republican even bothers to pretend to really be interested in minority Americans, Americans of minority groups. So, he's interesting. He's not. He's a clever politician. And he has. And there's something about him that I think sets him off from the pack. Mm-hmm. And he has his eye on the main chance. I mean, he's the rare Republican potential presidential candidate who would have his wife and children sit as he did for a big feature in Vogue magazine. You know, it's hard to imagine Vogue is on the even on the radar screen of Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz or Michelle Bachmann or any of these people.
Yeah. Frank, stay where you are. We're talking with Frank Rich, and we feel lucky to do that. I love your writing so much. And we're going to take a quick break and then come back and talk more politics about the presidential race and much more. So stay with us. Faith Middleton, my guest, New York Magazine editor-at-large Frank Rich. He also writes for NewYorkMagazine.com. He is an HBO consultant, especially on the series Veep, author of The Greatest Story Ever Sold. His New York Magazine piece on Fox News is at our website, WNPR.org. And I'll tell you what else is there. There's been a lot of talk about President Obama's sit-down with one of the hosts of Funny or Die. So we picked it up and put it on the site for you to see. This is a guy who likes to sit politicians down and make fun of them in different ways. So it's kind of interesting that President Obama decided to do this. 203-776-9677 at our website, WNPR.org. Search the Faith Middleton Show to find the link. Okay, Frank Rich, there's a thing that confuses me since we were talking about Christie. Here, you know, the very conservative convention, CPAC, Chris Christie is there. He talks, acts the way Chris Christie does and gets a standing ovation. And I think to myself, you know, there are a lot of people from the extreme wing of the Tea Party there who aren't Chris Christie fans. What's the standing ovation about?
I don't think it means much. First of all, as you know, the CPAC event concluded with a straw poll that is meaningless in terms of actually affecting anything, but at least shows the sentiment of the crowd for the presidency. And Christie fared poorly. I mean, he got in single digits. And according to at least a Washington Post account, Christie's speaking slot wasn't even wildly attended, and a lot of the so-called premium seats were empty. So that standing ovation could have been his partisans that were packing the House, or who knows what it is. But CPAC, by the way, the winner of the CPAC poll in a landslide was Paul, who got 30-something percent. So I wouldn't attach much importance to that. It's a very conservative organization, and last year they didn't even invite him.
Yeah, I was thinking Chris Christie was really addressing New Jersey. But we'll see. We'll see, and we'll talk more. So there's been a lot of conversation about the billionaire Koch brothers. Mm-hmm. They've made their money largely in coal, and have been funding lots and lots of things to knock out Democrats across the country at all levels. So Harry Reid was just yelling about this, and so were a few other people. So they seem to be on a campaign now to come after the Koch brothers and link them. Well, I'm reading now about this rich Democrat who has said that if the Democrats will get behind climate change, he has millions to give. And I wonder what you make of this on both sides.
Well, I think that I don't know how much to make of it. The climate change liberal donor, whose name, of course, now escapes me.
Me too.
Is another billionaire. Look, it's fine to pour money into that cause, obviously, into candidates who support it. As you said, the Koch brothers have a huge vested interest in defeating any kind of environmental regulation because they're huge polluters. Their privately held company is in the top 15 polluters in the world, I believe, certainly in America. And they want deregulation for everything. They also want tax breaks and anything else that isn't nailed down. That's their thing. I think that what will happen is they'll continue to give money. I think the Democrats are correct in exposing that these organizations with anodyne-sounding names are, in fact, fronts for two brothers with very specific corporate interests that they want to get a Congress to give them to benefit them. And the Republicans will vilify the Democratic donor in a similar way, although the scale of what he's proposing doesn't seem to be as big as what the Koch brothers do, and probably not as well organized. One of the most interesting things about the Koch brothers is that they've really mounted a challenge to Karl Rove, because Karl Rove, as many may recall, has his own super PAC that financed candidates in the last election, and almost all of them did poorly, lost. And so another reflection of the overall civil war in the Republican Party is the fact that some of the money that would have gone to Karl Rove is going to the Koch brothers. So it's sort of pick your poison, but that's that's what's going on behind the scenes, and I find very interesting.
As a party, the Republicans pulled together in the end. Democrats in a bit more disarray. And so, it's early, isn't it? I mean, I know they're fighting at the moment for the soul of the party.
Yes, it's definitely early, and as we were saying before, it's ridiculously early to think about 2016. I mean, so many things could happen, and we don't know what they are.
Yeah. So I see these polls that show that the majority of people in the poll agree with Democrats on the major issues, and these same people say they think in the midterms they're going to vote Republican. And I don't know whether to trust those polls. I don't know what this means.
Well, I think... look, there's a lot of disenchantment with the president, and there's disenchantment. I mean, there's detestation of him on the Republican side, and the Democratic side. There's disenchantment for one reason or another. Some of it, I think, has to do with the Affordable Care Act, but I'm not convinced that all of it does. Some of it, I think, has to do with credibility issues surrounding the Affordable Care Act. To some extent, the economy, which is still sputtering for many people at best, and a kind of, malaise that's going on that seems to afflict most presidents actually in their second terms anyway. A midterm election with no presidential race on the ballot is won by the most enthusiastic voters. The enthusiastic voters are the ones who are going to go to the polls. And in 2010, the shellacking of the Democrats was precisely because the electorate skewed very white and very old. Young voters, minority voters who had come out for Obama in 2008 and would again in 2012, couldn't be bothered to turn up in 2010. And so it skewed the results, and indeed it skewed the results so much that the Romney campaign 2 years later convinced themselves that the electorate of the midterms was the actual electorate, and there'd be similar depression of minority turnout in 2012, and then got their head handed to them because it was a totally different electorate that came out when Obama was back on the ticket. This time, we have a president who's increasingly a lame duck president, whose popularity is flat, is not generating a ton of enthusiasm. You have a Republican Party that loathes Obama, thinks Obamacare is the closest thing to Nazism they've ever seen, or socialism, or whatever. Those people are motivated to come out, and so it's likely to be very bad for Democrats. I think the polls are right about that, and I don't know what would actually change it. I have no idea whether the Senate will remain in Democratic hands or not. So in the end, it comes down to individual races. But whatever happens in 2014 is not a predictor of 2016 any more than 2010 was a predictor of 2012.
I was thinking about Ken Dowdrick, who has been on a political show that I do. I respect him as a political analyst very much. And I remember him saying, the congressional races are so local in feeling that when people go in and vote, as mad as they are at the government in general, they tend to vote with a local sensibility when it comes to their congressperson.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. And in the end, we're talking about also because particularly in the House, everything's so gerrymandered, there are very few examples of seats that are really up for grabs anyway, that are competitive. But there are a lot of retirements this year in the House and the Senate, so more are up for grabs than usual. And I think that he's right. The House races in particular may depend more on local issues. The Senate races, there may be more of a national tinge depending on the state, but it really is going to be about turnout. In states where someone is an incumbent is retiring and a seat is genuinely in play, it's going to be about turnout. And I think that there are some people who and probably in both parties, but who are just sort of fed up of the whole thing and aren't going to vote no matter what, fed up in Washington.
Here's our number if you'd like to join the conversation. Do you have a sense of feeling powerless? Are you disgusted with Washington to the point that you say, even though I might agree with the views of the president or Democrats on a number of issues, I'm voting Republican to send a message? 203-776-9677. Frank Rich is my guest, and he is editor-at-large at New York Magazine and also an HBO consultant, creative consultant on the series Veep. He's author of the book The Greatest Story Ever Sold. What is going on right now with de Blasio, Mayor de Blasio in New York? He seems to be having, every time he turns around, a hard time at this point.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think it's way too early to judge.
Yeah.
And he entered office to this insane winter of, you know, snowstorms that just won't quit. And everyone hates the mayor during a snowstorm. I think that the biggest problems he has include kind of winging it about public relations. I mean, granted, it's a superficial part of the job, but he promised a transparent administration, and this crazy instances have happened. For instance, you know, being caught speeding after talking about safe driving, this kind of thing. Gets defensive or he disappears. He's been very slow to make major appointments, and his main PR person, he basically threw the wolves when this young woman was attacked because she was dating, romantically involved with Elliot Spitzer, which, you know, part of her private life that, you know, she's entitled to date whoever she wants, and yet I think this is somebody who is actually quite valuable to de Blasio in dealing with press relations, and now he doesn't have her. So I think it's a lot of unforced errors, but I also think it's really early, and we'll see.
Let's see. You mentioned white and you mentioned old, and I put it this way because I was so fascinated with your analysis of the Fox network. I had been among the people who thought when I heard this statistic that Fox's audience is bigger than CNN and MSNBC combined, that its audience was just a powerhouse, that it was huge. And then you point out, looking inside that data, that it's a million viewers, let's say. They skew very white, old, of course, very conservative, have a feeling about Fox in a sort of religious sense. So the number's much smaller than I thought. And, you know, you're saying that liberals and liberal centrists are silly to respond to these issues that Fox raises, or as you put it, manufactures.
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot, and I'm someone who used to react in a Pavlovian way to Fox, but I realize it's kind of pointless. First of all, the whole cable news audience in general, as you just indicated, isn't that large, and while the three network news, 6:30, at least in New York and the East, telecasts are all fading and all also track old demographically. They even CBS News, which is number three of the three, can have the evening news can have 7 or 8 million viewers a night, and you know, in a really great night, maybe a hit show on Fox like The O'Reilly Show can have a quarter of that and a really big night. But the average is more like a million, as you said, in prime time. As old as the audience is for news in general and television, it's crazy old at Fox. The median age in the latest Nielsen figures, which I got for my piece, is 68. And who is that audience? It's people who are going to believe in that stuff no matter what anyone else has to say about it. It's people who are going to vote Republican. It's people who are going to vote in the midterms. But it's not the sort of a liberal perception that, oh, some innocent American is channel surfing and they turn on, they happen on Fox News and suddenly they're hearing about the IRS scandal or Benghazi or that President Obama was not born in America, and they're going to be duped into thinking it's a legitimate news organization and be brainwashed. That just underestimates the American public, which, you know, no one ever went broke underestimated, but that really, most people, that's not, doesn't happen. Most people who find Fox News recognize in 2 minutes what it is, and it speaks to the converted, and probably MSNBC does too, but that's the base. They're going to vote Republican no matter what, and the liberal idea that all this stuff should be answered and legitimized by answering it, I think, is preposterous after a certain point. Yes, you have to answer lies that could spread in legitimate media, whether it be the swift boating of John Kerry or the birthing stuff about Barack Obama, but most of it is you know, it's nonsense, and it's crazy to engage. Let those people enjoy themselves. There's a kind of masturbatory quality to it. And indeed, one example of this was in the last election. If you were a loyal Fox News viewer, you absolutely thought that Mitt Romney was going to win in a cakewalk.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you may have sat on your hands and done nothing to help him win. And get the feeling even the Romney campaign watched Fox News so much that they believed it, which is why they were completely, by all accounts after the election, blindsided
stunned
by the results. They didn't see it coming because they were too busy being in that bubble.
Frank Rich, I want to ask how, after this break, how you consult on the HBO series Veep, which is about to have its premiere in April. Stick around, and we'll be right back with more Frank Rich. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, that's FaithWNPR, or join the conversation with us on Facebook, search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening and to our talented team, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. My guest is New York Magazine editor-at-large and online contributor Frank Rich. He is an HBO consultant and author of The Greatest Story Ever Sold. And on the line, calling 203-776-9677. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
Sure.
Happy to be here. Well, I called you a couple of years ago, I recall, and I was you were wondering why the political dialogue in the country had gotten so bitter. And I said it was, at that time, you know, with shows like yours and others on NPR, because you have no conservatives in the studio, in NPR, anywhere. Every story you tell is from a liberal point of view, and that you're constantly trotting out these strawman arguments that have nothing to do with what most conservatives actually think and believe. And sure enough, you know, a couple of calls later, someone called in and said, responding to that fast-talking Republican Chris, me, what he objected to was this idea that all taxes are bad and all government are bad, and you and your guests didn't see any problem with that. Well, the big problem with that is that it's the perfect straw man. I don't know a single conservative who believes all government's bad, all taxes are bad. We're not anarchists. The difference is, how much money should we be taxing? Who should we be taking it from and why? And more importantly, how much should we be spending? What should we be spending it on and why? And those are discussions we don't get into in any detail with conservatives in the studio to set the record straight.
Chris,
Fox News, when I watch it, the few times I do watch it, seems relatively objective compared to NPR, CNN, and any of a number of places.
Okay, well, you're on the record with that. But Chris, here's a question that I have for you, and then I'm going to give Frank Rich a chance to respond. My question would be, of all the issues right now, what is the number one issue that you care most about or you think we should be talking most about?
Well, I think for one thing, we should set the record straight. I don't think it's not the website that's the problem with Obamacare, with the Affordable Health Care Act. It's the whole concept is absurd and ridiculous.
Which part?
The entire concept of having the government tell people what kinds of government should have and what kinds of coverage insurance companies have to offer. It should be a free market where people get to choose these things. And it's just it's ridiculous. The whole law is undermining mm-hmm. the healthcare system that we have.
Okay, so Frank Rich, do you have a response for Chris?
Obviously, it's not. I can't speak to everyone who appears on NPR. I don't monitor NPR. I do think, as I was saying before, there are conflicting views within the Republican Party and the right in general, and not everyone on the right agrees with each other. And you know, one example I cited not long ago in this conversation was foreign policy, where you mm-hmm. have a real split between the Lindsey Graham, John McCain, Chris Christie sort of neocon wing that wants to have more American engagement abroad, and on the other hand, someone like Rand Paul, who isn't an isolationist like his father, but still is against American intervention in a way that actually I think speaks to a lot of people not on the right, not just those who share his views from the right. In the case of Obamacare, I mean, we don't have the time to get into a whole discussion of that, but yes, that's a serious debate, and it's the same debate that there's been between liberals and conservatives in the entire history of post-New Deal or America. It's the mm-hmm. same debate that there was about Social Security and there was about Medicare. Medicare is a government-run health care program, and it does tell people similar things to what Obamacare does about what kind of care they can have and who can do it. And the truth is, whatever happens, we have a health care system in the country that I think most people would agree does not serve everybody, is wildly costly by the standards of wealthy countries, and is going to bankrupt America under almost any system. And Obamacare is one attempt to try to fix it. It may not succeed. I don't think we know yet. On the other hand, it's not clear what other alternatives are being offered by the right. Free market alone can't solve it, because taxpayers are going to pay for it when a poor person walks into an emergency room and gets
I'd much rather pay for it that way than the way that's being
That's a fair enough position. But anyway, I think these things are debated everywhere. I don't think they're just debated on Fox. And Fox point of view.
Within the Republican Party, because I think there's I was an independent until about 2008, when Hillary and Obama both scared the bejesus out of me. I was, and their policies just seemed absurd and unworkable to me. But what bothers me too is this false narrative about all kinds of things that liberals are constantly telling themselves about on NPR and elsewhere that just aren't in accord with reality. And if you had some conservatives presenting more evidence, I should also point out the Tea Party just stands for tax enough already. We're against the size of the government and government spending. I happen to be pretty much an agnostic, so anytime I go to a website and start making conservative arguments and pointing out specific economic facts of history and other things, people immediately start associating me with the 700 Club or some such thing. You've got to stop doing stuff like that. Pay attention to the details of the arguments.
I think you're accusing me of something I haven't done.
Not you. I'm talking to your audience.
Okay. Well, Chris, thanks for calling the show and participating. 203-776-9677. Frank Rich is my guest. And, Frank, I'm so curious about how you consult for Veep. For those who haven't seen it, I absolutely adore this series.
Well, thank you.
So how do you do it? Julia Louis-Dreyfus is playing the vice president. Hilarious and clever.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've had as a sort of second sideline career been working HBO on a bunch of things for the past 6 years, mm-hmm. really, and part of it is occasionally being involved as a producer. And actually, I've been a producer of Veep since it was first conceived of by Armando Iannucci, the guy who created it 3 years ago, and we're about to, as you mentioned, in April 6th, we're going to start airing the third season. What's interesting, there are many interesting things about Veep, and obviously I can't be objective about it. I love the show and I love working on it. But Iannucci's perspective is interesting. He's British. He's maybe known to some of your listeners as the creator of a very successful parody of British government, a BBC comedy called The Thick of It, which has sort of a cult following in America, and of a movie that was nominated for Oscar for screenplay a few years ago called In the Loop. And what I, as someone who grew up in Washington, has covered in Washington, I think what Veep brings through him is a sense of just the whole absurdity of the system, that so little gets done, not just because of partisanship, but because of pettiness, where people are out for, politicians are out for their own good, their own image, holding on to power above all else. And in the case of Veep, the heroine, if that's the right word, of the show, a vice president named Selina Meyer, played by wonderfully by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, we don't even identify her political party, because the point of the show is it doesn't matter. No matter what she does, she's stymied. She's close to power, but she has no real power. And she has an office surrounding her of staffers who are all just more concerned with climbing up the greasy poles, stabbing each other in the back, than the people who ostensibly voted this government into office. In the first season, we had an episode that I think sort of is a metaphor for the whole show, where two aides are arguing different sides of a bill, trying to convince the vice president, who will have to cast a deciding vote. Each of them trying to convince her to go a different way on the vote. In the end, those two same staffers end up arguing the opposite case they began with, because they each decided it's politically advantageous to flip positions, and the vice president ends up casting a vote against her own position that she had articulated in her campaign for political advancement, because she saw a political percentage in it. And that's sort of the idea of the show. It's the un-West Wing, truth of the American way, never triumph, and it's grubby, and to me it has a more real, although it's funny and meant to be funny, it has a more realistic view of Washington
than House of Cards, right? David, welcome to the show with Frank Rich.
Hello?
Hi, David, go ahead. Yep.
Well, hi, I apologize. I'm going to kind of interrupt here. I listen to NPR periodically, and I'm kind of a news junkie. I follow as much news and as many diverse medias as I can.
Okay.
And I agree with Chris in general that a conservative viewpoint, I think, would further the discussion and help NPR. I think media is part of the problem with the bitter partisanship that's going on in the U.S. right now. And I think you guys got to just try and step to heal it. It's not the conservatives are this way, the liberals are that way. I mean, I think media has a very important role in our government, as our founding fathers noted. And, you know, it's really fallen down in the past couple of years. My sister is very liberal. I'm very conservative. You know, we're starting to have conversations that we used to have 10 years ago. We couldn't have conversations probably 5 years ago. We were just so divided. But anyway, that's my two cents. I'll let you guys comment on it.
Okay, David.
A conservative would be great on NPR.
Thank you, David.
All right, have a good
okay,
day.
Okay, you too. Frank, we hear this, you know, from time to time, as you know, you've been in the news business a long time.
Yeah.
That really it's the media who are at fault in this and fuel the flames of divisiveness. So what do you think? Is it a fair charge?
I really think not. I'm certainly the last person to defend everything that the media does, including media that I've worked for. They're very fallible institutions. They all make mistakes. New York Times, when I was there, you know, had the bogus reporting about Iraq's nuclear capabilities on the eve of that war. You know, there've been every news organization, including NPR, has had its failures.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I don't think the dysfunctionality and the divisiveness in America really is not created by the media. I don't think it's created by NPR, and I don't think it's created by Fox News. I think that we actually have a genuine divide in this country, and the media reflects that. And there's always been angry and partisan media in America, and indeed what goes on now could be argued is tame compared to some of the stuff that went on in the 19th century, including, I might add, during the Civil War. Let's keep some perspective here about where we are. And so I wish it were so simple. In any event, it's not going to change, because one thing I think that I hope that liberals and conservatives agree about is we don't want the government controlling news media. We don't want them running it. We don't want them censoring it. We don't want them telling people what to say or what to report. And the truth is, there are some agreements now among left and right about big government, including about government intimidation of news media and NSA spying and all the rest of it. And we've learned that New York Times and Fox News reporters alike have had to fight battles in the past year over sources and the government that wants to find out who they are and punish them. Mm-hmm. So we're all in that together, and the idea that the media is going to, suddenly, I don't know what people who say the media causes want. They want everyone just to have no opinions about anything and just print the handouts of government and business the way they're and not investigate anything. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's just a sideshow argument. It has nothing to do with the real issues, which, the big ones are dividing the country. As the previous conservative caller said, like Obamacare, those are divisive issues, and that's just one of many. They're dividing the country right now, and we should debate them, and debate will happen in the form of media on many, many occasions.
Well, left, right, or center, no matter what your political persuasion, I don't think there would be disagreement on this. A show that you produced for HBO on Sondheim is one of the best things I've ever seen on television.
Well, thank you. I'm Six by Sondheim. I'm very proud of it. I loved working on it. And, he's someone I had, an artist, a great American artist who is just turning 84 this mm-hmm. week, who is still writing and vital. And to bring him to a wider audience in TV and let him speak in his own words was real honor and a thrill for me, I have to say.
And you can see this on Netflix or on HBO To Go, Six by Sondheim. It is worth seeing. Let me tell you, it's just, I was knocked out by it, Frank.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad you saw it and liked it.
Okay, so we've got a lot going on. We didn't even get to Syria and Russia and Putin and the Cold War and all that stuff. Thank you so much for being on the show. Always a pleasure.
Great pleasure for me, and I look forward to the next.
Thanks, Frank. Bye-bye. Frank Rich, New York Magazine editor-at-large and an online contributor for them. He's an HBO consultant to the series Veep, which is starting, I think, April 6th. And at our site right now, you can see the Funny or Die episode with President Obama, WNPR.org. As always, this show is about the richness of life. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.